Like, I was very pleased with Summer League, especially for this year's rookie class. I thought it was a great turnout for Summer League. It had to be one of the highest
attendance events.
Yeah, that I've seen since I've been, attending Summer League.
Rick Bucher.
Where we were staying four seasons. Where
you're really
were you?
Always concerned about where I'm staying.
You're really concerned about what I'm saying.
Well, I want to make sure that you're taking care of. I want to make sure you're living the lifestyle that is appropriate for BJ Armstrong, three-time NBA champ.
I was in Vegas.
Why are you embarrassed to admit that you are she? So you're not gonna tell us where you stay?
No, I don't want to.
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to the 45th edition of the BJ and Bucher podcast. I am Rick Bucher. He is BJ Armstrong. And let's get right to it, BJ. There is no offseason. That's what we're discovering when it comes to basketball in general, right? But you had an opportunity to take in the Big Three, which is one of the many basketball events that's going on during the offseason. And I've watched it. I have not attended. I've watched it. I've seen plenty of promotion on social media. I've talked to Al Harrington and Steven Jackson, Kenyon Martin about their participation. Seems to be like it has the chance to be the master, the golf version of the master circuit, where you do have the opportunity for guys to continue to play beyond their NBA abilities. How do we make this work? Does it have legs? How do we extend it from what you saw in actually attending one of them?
Well, I have had a chance to attend one event, and I was very impressed with the production, the promotion of it, and all of the marketing. Ice Cube and his staff have done a wonderful job. On the other hand, I think it's up for the players and the product to improve. I think the guys have to get in better shape. I think we're going to have to get better coaching, and I think there's going to have to be more emphasis on the actual product itself. And a lot of it has to do with age. I mean, Father Time doesn't miss anyone.
Sure.
So the guys, I think, are playing hard, but it's sometime when they fall or they cut, I was like, oh!
Who impressed you the most and who scared you the most? Like, who was the guy out there that you went, oh, man? If he doesn't get hurt, I'll be shocked.
I saw a lot of that. Too many. I mean, it was a lot. It was a couple of guys went baseline, and you could tell he wanted to dunk it.
Yeah.
But it was like, let me just smack this backboard and live to fight another day. You know what I mean? There was a lot of, moves you saw in the mind. You saw the play developing, but they just couldn't. Like, the hole opened up, but they just couldn't get through there.
You know what's funny for me was some of the trash talking that went on.
Oh, man.
Like, how serious. Like, Mike Bibby was into it with everybody.
Well, you still got some beefs that were there in the 90s. I think they just picked it up from that still was going. But I'm telling you, Abdul Raouf,
yeah,
I watched him. He looked like he might be able to play a little bit now. If I was a GM, I wouldn't be mad if someone picked him up on a 10-day just to see what it is. Yeah, because he looks great. His jumper looks good. The release was still quick. And the way the game is playing right now, I would just write in his contract, if I represented him, by the way, all he has to run is from three-point line to three-point line. Because right now, Abdul Raouf, I think he can make an open three.
Get that Del Curry deal.
Offensively, he can still play in the NBA game. Now, defensively, I don't know what he can do or who he can guard. But offensively, that man can still put up some points. And I thought he looked great. But you saw overall, I think the guys are just going to have to get in a little better shape.
What do you think of the format? What do you think of the idea of playing, playing to 25 for the half, and then I think it's first to 50, win by two, I think?
Well, it took some time for me to get adjusted. I was looking for the clock, I was looking for, clock and all of those things. But, they were just playing to 25. So it was more like a street game, I was like, kind of took me back. Like, okay, when it got to be 20, everybody turned up the defense a little bit, it was a little bit more physicality when the game starts getting closer. And it was very engaging. And I liked how the crowd the momentum kind of builds as they get closer to that 25 point mark for halftime, then 50 for the game. So the 4-point shot was interesting because it's a makeable shot.
Right.
And it really, it's a game changer. The 4-point shot is really, just like the 3-point shot was a game changer when it was introduced. The 4-point shot, you know, I was trying to see how it would work if you played it in a real game. Mm-hmm. That's a game changer. You know, it makes a possession to something where the fans were kind of engaged with it. I think it's something they should maybe consider.
ABA brought the 3-point shot into the NBA. Maybe the 3-ball tournament. The 3-on-3 tournament brings the 4-point shot in.
Yeah, it was. You know, the fans seemed to enjoy the 4-point shot, and it really shortens the possessions that you need to to either regain the lead or extend your lead. It was an interesting format, but I enjoyed it. But I think in a year or two, when guys are in better shape, I think when guys are closer to their actual playing career. Some of the guys have been away from, 10 plus years or so. I think it has some legs. And like I said, big ups to Ice Cube and them for organizing that and giving guys an opportunity to play. And it all took us back. You know, everyone was out there talking about how they wanted to see the rough and tough play. And then Oakley checked into the game. And it took him about 30 seconds to remind us the 90s are over, and thank goodness. Thank goodness. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And,
that's real.
The one thing is about Charles Oakley, no one flops around Oakley.
Right.
You know you were actually hit with Oakley. So and it took him about 30 seconds. I mean, I love Oak, but I mean, I think it was Al Harrington he hit. Like, it was like for no reason at all. I was like, oh, what are you doing? But the crowd enjoyed it, though. Fan participation was great.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on. LeBron James came out with some rather pointed comments about this president and his reaction to the events in Charlottesville. I'm not going to go into all the details. You'd have to have been under a rock or completely off the grid in order to not know what's going on. And if you have done that, then go find out. But the fact of the matter is, LeBron James was very critical of what he called this so-called president and his reaction to it. Now, I was also aware that Dan Gilbert, the owner of the Cavaliers, I had read that he supported this president and that he donated, it's been reported, donated $750,000 to this president's inauguration. And that was like, there were other companies that donated, but his was it was the biggest number that I'd seen. We all know that LeBron James has the potential to be a free agent next summer. And there has been rumblings for a while now that the relationship between Dan Gilbert and LeBron James is not good and could be a factor in his deciding to stay or to go when he becomes a free agent. I don't know, BJ, how much this difference, and I'm slow to call it a political difference. To me, it is a worldview, a view on racial equality difference that is at stake here. But that said, when we look at LeBron James and the decision that he may be facing, and I'm sure that in your time in the league, you knew that there were owners out there who had different viewpoints than you did. Where does this factor in, this potential of a difference on a view, a strong view, enough where one guy's putting $750,000 into a guy and the other guy is taking to social media to make his case made? How potentially important is that difference in view on the decision that LeBron James makes next summer?
It's very naive for us to think that someone, I can't work for owner X because he doesn't have the same view as me. Him and I can't figure out how to participate and work together in a working environment.
Okay.
In a working environment. That's what this is. You know, and it's one thing I learned as a basketball player and being in a team. I didn't have to like the people that I worked with. I had to respect those people, and I respect their views.
Okay.
I respect the fact of that's your view. As long as it doesn't, you're not trying to impose on my views. I can respect Rick Bucher's view. I don't have to agree with it. So most people are going to vote with their pocketbook in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are going to make a business decision. And most people are going to vote or side with the people who think like them. That's just human nature. Doesn't make it right. Doesn't make it wrong. It just is what it is. So I'm not here to judge any owner because they're Republican and I may be Democrat or vice versa.
But being in business with him, because let's face it, that's where the NBA is today with the superstars and owners.
There's something that we have to think of. The NBA has a shared ownership by all 30 teams.
Mm-hmm.
No matter if he goes and plays for Team X on the West Coast, Team D in the South, New York in the East, it doesn't matter. They're mm-hmm. all part of the same system. Now, all I'm saying is this, the NBA, he is part of the NBA. They're all sharing in the same system. The league and the owners are all teammates. So in the end, you can run from this, but you can't hide from it. It is what it is. And if we, and I say we, the players can't be naive to think, well, this owner is different from that owner. They're all in business together.
I get that. But you can't tell me that the relationship between LeBron James and Dan Gilbert is the exact same one as the relationship he has with the 29 other owners. Then look, as I said, I don't know what Dan Gilbert's position is. I don't know why he gave the $750,000. Maybe it was strictly a business decision. But if I'm LeBron James, I'd want to know.
Here's what I want to know. Or here's what the people want to know. What's the position of the league?
That too. I'm with you. I'm not worried about that.
The one thing that I found out when I played in that league, when I worked in that league, talking about the NBA, is that it's one league. We can sit here and talk about that team or this. It's one league. What is the league's position on racism? What is the league's position on race relations or whatever it is we're discussing? What is the league's position? And let's move on. Because in the end, this league has done an incredible job of involving, incorporating everyone. And we haven't tolerated that type of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, what is the league's position?
I don't know about that. Donald Sterling owned the Clippers for an awful long time, in spite of the fact that
I agree.
We knew some of the stuff that he was doing in his personal business.
I'm not naive to think that it doesn't exist. And I'm not going to fall into that trap of saying, well, it's a personal relationship. The relationship is very simple. LeBron James, like every other free agent that becomes a free agent, has to do what's best for him and his family moving forward in a league.
All right, let's move on to the second quarter. Let's move on to something a little easier to debate. In the second quarter, Dante Jones, he was with the Cavaliers last year, a longtime veteran. I don't know what his contract situation is, whether he's back with them again this year. But he was in an interview and said that Steph Curry of the Golden State Warriors, two-time league MVP, two-time champion, is not in his top 10 players in the league right now. And some people were surprised by that. Were you?
Woo! Well, every year, Rick, we get into the same debate, like MVP.
Oh, forever, on everything.
Every year.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's all the analytic guys come out and they give you the stats. Then there's all the guys who are former MVPs going to tell you why this guy. And then there's the coaches. Then there's the fans. And then, you know, everyone has. Now we're into top 10. The one thing, Rick, that is consistent with me, as you've known me a long time, winning to me is what this is all about. To me, just to me. Now, undoubtedly right now, Steph Curry has contributed to winning. I mean, they've won, was it a year ago or 2 years ago? They won the most games ever in the history of the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to hear, Dante, what makes a top 10 player? You just say, people say things, we throw it out there, and then we go,
we get all hot and bothered about it. I agree.
Okay. did he say top 10 in like building a team? Top 10 in...
Right. There's a lot of subjectivity that goes into that, right? Define the list.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, I need more clarity on what he's saying. Steph Curry is a phenomenal player. Phenomenal. Right. Now, I need to know what he was talking about.
So one of the things that he... One of the criteria or one of his explanations is that he weights two-way players. That how a player is as a defender... Okay. Is an important part of the equation.
Fair.
And he's looking at Klay Thompson, who does a lot of the heavy lifting, and
that's fair.
That's Steph is by all rights. I think he would concede it himself. Is not a top defender. Like they protect him in ways, or they take some of the responsibility, the defensive responsibility off his plate.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. If you're saying, look, I'm starting a team, or I'm talking about all around great players, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, any number of guys I'm putting ahead of Steph Curry. I hear that. I think sometimes a guy can be so impactful offensively that you have to weight what he does defensively different. But all that said, but here's my problem with it. His top 10 included guys like Anthony Davis and Karl Anthony Towns. Now, I'm sorry, but you can be talented. But if that talent doesn't equate, and you can be impactful, I can say, you know what, he has great defensive skills, he has great offensive skills. If those things don't translate to you winning games, then we're talking in a total vacuum. Like, how do I gauge the meaningfulness of that talent if you don't know how to apply it to win freaking games? And that's why Anthony Davis and Karl Anthony Towns, for me, that immediately, like, I'm looking at Dante and I'm going, okay, this is kind of a mess of the top 10.
But here is a real question.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I always go back to my experience. When you're in that draft room,
mm-hmm.
and you have to make a choice between Anthony Davis,
mm-hmm.
and Steph Curry,
mm-hmm.
what are you doing?
Based on what?
Right now.
I'm taking Steph Curry.
Okay, that's fair. That's
because
fair.
I know what he's capable of doing. I know how he's capable of impacting a team. Does he have talent around him? Absolutely. But Anthony Davis, for all that talent, I can't get him to the playoffs.
You're looking at what he's done for the Warriors and what he's done. I'm talking about two guys.
Yes.
Just two guys.
Yeah.
We're at the park.
Yeah.
Who are you taking? You taking Steph Curry or you taking Anthony Davis? If you just taking two guys, if you just looking at the players,
right,
and you're going to build a team,
right,
it's going to be much easier to build a team around Anthony Davis.
You're right. It's going to be
Steph
easier
Curry.
To you're build, build, well,
just like,
yes
just,
and no. Yes and no.
Just like because... you have, the perfect one was Hakeem Olajuwon and Michael Jordan.
Right. That's a tough call.
Right. Now, in the end, I think most basketball experts will say it would be easier
to take Hakeem Olajuwon.
Because Hakeem Olajuwon got to the finals before Michael Jordan. But now, I just want to make this one last point and then I'll let you talk. Now, based on what Steph Curry has done over the last 3 years, it's easy for us to say, but you cannot tell me that this kid, Anthony Davis is a huge talent. Just like Karl Towns is a huge
amazing.
Talent.
Amazing. No. No doubt.
This kid has had an amazing, but 3 or 4 year run now.
But I'm not going to ignore the intangibles, which is Steph Curry, for his talent, wherever you put it, has been able to assimilate that talent within a championship team. So the element that I get is Steph Curry is fearless in finding a way to make shots when I have the game on the line and has continued to do that.
Right.
He has been a leader as far as how my team operates and what I'm able, when I put those pieces together, Steph Curry is finding a way, how do I be an alpha? How do I be a leader and at the same time make room for my teammates so that we collectively can win? I can't underscore the value of that for me as the team builder if we're talking about this in building it. And I for all that Anthony Davis is as a talent, I know too much about, like, dude, I need you to lead. Like, I need you to have an impact on this team beyond your talent. And I have not seen that. All right. Time for the halftime break. Shane Freeman, our producer, take it away.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, the halftime break on the BJ and Bucher podcast. And today's halftime entertainment is Pharoah Monch and his song, Simon Says, one of my favorite hip hop records. Yeah. So take a listen. Hope you guys enjoy it.
Get up! Simon said, get up! Throw your hands in the sky! Queens is in the back, sipping yak, y'all, what's up?
Ladies!
Looking hot and pretty!
Yeah.
Doing your thing in the club, hot city!
Worldwide!
The gritty committee, pity the fool that acts! In the midst of the calm, the witty! Y'all know the name, Pharoah. Simonch ain't a damn thing changed. You all up in your ring, just inebriated. Straight from your original plan, you deviated. I deviated the pain with long-term goals. Slip my underground loop without the gold. You sold platinum around the world, I sold wood in the hood. But when I'm in the street, it's all good. Assume a motivated boom, control the game like boom. Ready to rock, clock, dollars flip, tips like a way to block shots. Styles greater, let my lyrics anoint. If you're holding up the wall, then you're missing the point. Get up! Simon said, get up! Throw your hands in the sky! Brooklyn in the back, shooting crap, y'all, what's up?
Ladies!
Looking hot and pretty!
Yeah.
Doing your thing in the club, hot city!
Worldwide!
The gritty committee, pity the fool that acts! In the midst of the calm, the witty!
Yo, where you at?
Uptown, let me see him. Notorious for the 6'5s and the BMs. Heads give you beef, you put them in the mausoleum. And don't start rumping till after 12 p.m. Ignorant minds are free him. If you tired of the same old every day, you will agree him. The most obligated, hard and R-rated. Slated to be the best, I must confess the star made it. Some might even say the song is sexist. It's cause I ask the girls to rub on the breasts. Whether you're riding a train or a Lexus, this is for either or rollies or Timexes. It's wicked like Exorcist, this is the joint. You holding up the wall and you're missing the point. Get up! Simon said, get up! Throw your hands in the sky.
I hope you enjoyed that. It is now the third quarter, and you know what that means. It is time for the trivia challenge.
You know what time it is, Rick.
It's winning time. It's winning time for the Buke. We know that. So, actually, technically, BJ won the last time out.
Sorry, I couldn't hear that. What'd you say?
Every squirrel finds a nut now and then. How that happens. In any event, this is Rookie of the Year voting facts. And the first question goes to you, BJ. Who was the runner-up in the 2011-2012 NBA Rookie of the Year voting? Was it Kenneth Faried, Ricky Rubio, Kawhi Leonard, or Iman Shumpert?
Who was the runner-up?
Who finished second?
Ricky Rubio, Kawhi Leonard. Who was the other two?
Ricky Rubio, Kawhi Leonard, Iman Shumpert, and Kenneth Faried.
Ooh, wow. I'm just going to say Ricky Rubio.
Very good. Correct. He was number two to Kyrie Irving. All right. What do you have for me?
Who was the runner-up in the 2010-2011 NBA Rookie of the Year vote?
Oh, my God.
A, Blake Griffin. B, John Wall. C, DeMarcus Cousins. Or D, Landry Fields.
Oh my God. Second. In 2011. This was for the 2011 award.
Yes.
Landry Fields, John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, or
Blake Griffin.
Blake Griffin. I'm going to say John Wall.
That would be correct.
I see you, Rick. All right. Who was the 2009-2010 NBA Rookie of the Year? Was it Stephen Curry, Brandon Jennings, Tyreek Evans, or Darren Collison?
Tyreek Evans.
He's a client. Of course you knew that. That is so jacked up, man. Unbelievable. I'm killing Shane for that, man. How am I supposed to win when he's giving you questions?
Yeah.
I would have been disappointed if you didn't know that.
All right.
What do you got?
Who was the runner-up behind D. Rose in 2008-2009 NBA Rookie of the Year voting? Brooke Lopez, Russell Westbrook, O.J. Mayo, Eric Gordon.
Oh, man.
Ooh, this is a good one. Ooh, this is a good one. I smell a victory.
I'm just going to go with it. I'm going to say O.J. Mayo.
Oh, you got it.
I got it.
Oh, you looked it up, though. You looked it up.
No, I didn't look it up. I was really – I don't know where Eric Gordon finished. That was my question. It was between those two. But I remember O.J. Mayo came out of the gate really hot.
Right.
All right. So because we don't have Shane here, we can't do the tiebreaker. So we're going to leave this as a tie, but this is the first time in the history of the BJ and Bucher podcast.
It ain't over with.
That we've had. We will continue. But this is the first time where both of us have not missed, where we've gone perfect. And the fact that Shane's not here, I think might have something to do with it.
I'm stepping my game up.
All right. So it's a tie. Hope you enjoyed that third quarter. And now I hope you'll enjoy our guest.
All right. It's our great pleasure to have Roger Mason, president of the Big Three 3-on-3 basketball tournament, former NBA veteran, former executive with the Players Union, now joining BJ and Bucher on our podcast. Roger, thank you so much for taking time. Congratulations on the Big Three. When you went into this, what were your expectations as far as the response or how much people were going to get into it? What were you hoping for?
No, I mean, we were hoping to have a product that was going to be competitive and that would be something that fans would enjoy. You know, some of the legends of the NBA, some of the guys that still have some gas in the tank, competing at a high level in a format that still fits their skill set. So, you know, we thought we had a great chance. You know, we all, you know, as NBA players know that the battles that we had in practice, 3-on-3, were memorable and great to see. And we wanted to kind of unlock that competitiveness for the fans to see.
Mace, this is BJ. First of all, I want to say congratulations on many levels. And not many people know this, but I was on the Chicago Bulls staff front office when we drafted this young kid.
Yep.
With the 31st pick? I can't remember. Is it the 31st pick?
It was technically the 30th pick because Minnesota didn't have a first-round pick, but by number, it was the 31st pick.
Out of University of Virginia, this kid came in, kid from Silver Springs, Maryland. And I remember that. It was like in 2002, if I remember correctly. Is that right around that time?
Yep, that's exactly right. Yep, Jerry Krause and BJ Armstrong, Pete Myers, those.
Yeah,
guys were my first memories in the NBA.
Absolutely.
Roger, you're now my favorite. You just created a trivia question for me that I think is going to stump people by saying, okay, Roger Mason was a second round pick, but what pick was he?
I know
anybody's going to get that you were the 30th pick. That's going to be a good one. You're going to make me some money. I appreciate that.
Yeah, but Mace, my question to you is, you guys are doing an unbelievable job, and I've had a chance to personally attend, you know, the games and view the games and brought my family there. Kind of walk us through where you guys are currently at, things you would want to see improve, and more importantly, kind of give us the vision of where you think this could go, the potential of the league, and I thought it was a terrific family entertainment.
Well, yeah, thanks, man, and it's been that way. You know, every step that in every city that we've gone to, we wanted to make it family friendly, great for kids and for families to come and spend their Sunday afternoons. And it feels like we've done that. You know, we've had attendance numbers well over 15,000 in multiple cities. And, you know, we wanted to create a platform for these guys that still can play. Obviously, a lot of them are household names, and they've made plenty of money and don't necessarily need the money, but they miss the competitiveness, and they feel they still have something to give to the fans out there. So that's a product that we've put out on the court. You know, these guys playing competitive basketball, getting after it, and us creating a nice atmosphere at these arenas where, you know, families can enjoy some music and good entertainment and some really competitive basketball.
So, Roger, one of the things that I saw was some of the guys, you know, seemed like they could be in a little better shape. But there was one guy in particular. I mean, I got to, you know, we're in the fraternity, so we got to be honest with each other. But there was Abdul Raouf. I think he can still play right now in the NBA.
You know, the NBA is interesting because you can't hand check. In our league, you can hand check. And so it's actually harder to score against guys in our league when you've got that physicality, where in the NBA, you know, you can't touch anybody. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, that guy, you know, to be his age and to be performing the way he is, you know, I don't know if he can play 5-on-5, you know, and compete with those young guns on a full court. But I line him up against anybody in the half court, and he's going to get a shot off, and he's going to be a problem out there. And so, you know, there are some guys out there that could be in better shape. For the most part, you know, the guys really have taken it serious. You know, they come in tip-top shape. We have one guy, Mike Sweetney, who lost over 127 pounds in 6 months to be able to play in something like this. He could still probably get another 30 to 40, but it just shows a level of commitment that these guys have really gotten themselves in condition to be able to play on the court.
But other than having guys in better shape and maybe having a better sense of like just what this is going to take to play at a high level, what are some of the other things that you guys have learned that you are will at least consider tweaking, or the things that you think might improve the overall package?
Well, I think the first thing is we want to create a training camp for these guys next year, so you know they have a little bit more time to get their legs under them. I think if you look at the quality of play, you know, week one, you know, the basketball was pretty good. But as we got to week 6, 7, and 8, you know, you really started seeing these guys more athletic and dunking and moving around. So one thing we've learned is we definitely would want to give these guys a good training camp. And I think, you know, the guys will tell you themselves that, you know, they didn't necessarily know what to make of it. But, you know, by the time that ball went up and they saw how competitive and they saw how hard guys were playing, I think they're going to want to prepare a little bit more for this next year as well.
Roger, one of the things I was amazed at was you talked about the fans, was the configuration of the arena, which was like, you know, I've been in the Staples Center thousands of times, and the configuration, if you could talk a little bit about that, and all the A-list stars that you had out there. I mean, everyone was sitting courtside, was Martin Lawrence, Ice Cube, LL Cool J, you know, Dwayne Wade. I mean, the support you guys have been getting has been incredible.
Yeah, well, I think it's a few things. One, as far as the format of the court, you know, you got to tip your hat out to Ice Cube. The guy's a visionary. The guy, you know, has gone to countless LA Lakers games as well. And he's been a huge NBA fan for decades. And what he wanted to do was kind of give a different view. He wanted to create a boxing ring on the court. And that's why our court is a little bit different. We've got a half court. You know, we've got these four-point circles. But we also kind of have a setting where all the celebs and all the fans really feel like they're in an intimate setting. And it is unique, and I think it separates us from a lot of basketball games. And when you look at, you know, the support we've gotten from the A-list celebrities, you know, the Dwayne Wade's and LL's and, you know, even Chris Brown is a basketball fan, to Martin Lawrence. You know, we've had Russell Westbrook and James Harden, you know, MVP, co-MVP, MVP. So we've had a lot of top-flight celebrities that want to see these games. And when they come and they see the environment, we've gotten great responses from them. And we look forward to continuing that trend.
You know, James Harden's going to be really happy that you called him co-MVP. I think in his mind, co-MVP, he's going to be happy that somebody acknowledged that. Roger, I have to ask you, just because it's something that we talked about earlier in the podcast and something that I just think is important. It's an important subject in our world right now. And that's obviously not just the events in Charlottesville, but the events overall and race relations in our country. And we've had LeBron James come out and speak out. And because you're part, you were part of the players union, and I wonder for you, like, this has been, a lot of this has been generated right now because of Colin Kaepernick and Michael Bennett and guys protesting through the national anthem. What is it that you think for the NBA at large, the players and the league, how does the league have to collectively, players, owners, commissioner, everybody, what do you think is necessary or right for all involved to address this and find some solidarity?
Yeah, you know, overall, it's just unfortunate. You know, I think, you know, certainly the events in Charlottesville for me really hit home because I went to UVA, and to see what was going on campus, you know, it just hits your heart really heavy. So, you know, it's something that's not going away. And I think league with Adam and the Players Association with Michelle Roberts, they're going to need to continue to be leaders. You know, I think in sports, it's always interesting, you know, how you know, sports play such a role in culture and in our society. And so I just think that, you know, Adam will step up. You know, I think, you know, being one of the more progressive leagues in the world, you know, we've always, as the NBA family, stood up for what's right. And certainly Adam has been doing that. And knowing Michelle Roberts the way I know her, I'm sure there's heavy discussions going on between the league and the union about, you know, ways that we can positively impact and really spread love. You know, to me, you know, that's the message that really should resonate above everything else. Everyone's got a perspective, but what's happening is clear. You know, Black men are being oppressed in this notion, and it is something that, you know, can't go untalked about. But I think the message of love is something that I hope the league and the union and certainly the Big Three, we're going to try to spread.
Well, Roger, before we let you out of here, we just want to say we're fans here at the BJ and Bucher Show. And you're always welcome here.
And
before we let you go, tell us about the playoffs, where you guys are doing, where can we catch you, and where can we view this to all of our listeners out here that's listening to the podcast here today?
Yes, well, first and foremost, BJ, you know you're my guy. Rick, you too. And so anytime you guys want me on, I'm there. This has been fun. And as we prepare for Seattle is week one of the playoffs at Key Arena. The game will be on Fox Sports 1 on Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. And then, of course, the championship is going to be on Big Fox Live.
Oh, wow.
You know, August 26th in Vegas at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. So we're really excited, man. This has been a huge success, and we want to finish the season strong, and we want to see who's going to win this thing. You know, Trilogy with Kenyon Martin and Al Harrington and Sean McCants, they've got a formidable team, and we'll see if they can go undefeated and win the champ.
Are you guys selling a twofer? If I buy a ticket to the Big Three, do I get into the fight as well, or how does that work?
Speaking of that, I want to know how that negotiation went. How'd you guys move that fight? Hey, can you give us a insight on that?
Oh, that's a podcast. That's a whole separate podcast.
Yeah, I mean, hey, everyone has their price, I guess.
Everyone has their price, and I tell you one thing. You know, you're not going to punk Ice Cube. That much I can tell you.
Hey, mate, can you tell us, when you guys have meetings, does he say, yay, yay?
You know what, you'll catch a yay, yay every now and then, but my favorite is when he says it's a good day.
It's a good day. Well, hey, today is a good day, and again, we appreciate you coming on, and thanks again, and all the best, and we'll certainly be watching and rooting for you guys, and hey, all the best, and best of luck.
I appreciate it, guys.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Roger.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, if you're listening from iTunes, be sure to subscribe to the show. And this is important. Rate, I know I say this every time, rate and leave a review. It's really important to us. We want to hear what you have to think. It's going to help us make the podcast only better and bring you the kind of content that you're looking for. Also, you can check out our website, bjandbucher.com. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter at BJ and Bucher. BJ, it's been fun. We'll do it again next week.